always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Wednesday's edition. I got it right, even though it's on a short week. Wednesday's edition of the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. Thanks for joining us once again here at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, or perhaps you are listening to us anywhere on the planet at newstalkstl.com on our app, which is fantastic. All you got to do is download it to your phone. Your phone becomes your radio, or on Rumble, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, you name it. We are streaming everywhere. We're on Trump Trial Watch today, and we've got a great guest to talk about that with, Zach Smith at 425, our legal eagle, and a special announcement. Chris Arps, I'm happy that we're celebrating your birthday tomorrow because we're celebrating it today.
Is that the special announcement?
It's part of it.
Ah, you know, one of these Wednesdays, I expect Mr. Vasevich to come into the show on a Wednesday playing Humpin' by the Gap Band. Those that are 80s generation know the Gap Band, know that song. It's a perfect hump day song, but I'm doing well. Birthday tomorrow, be 58 years old. How hard it is to say that, because I know I can do math. I know chronologically that's how old I am, but mentally, it's hard to believe I'm that old.
Well,
it really is.
You don't look it. I'll say that. And second of all, Chris, there was a famous lady over the weekend. I'm going to say this because she posted it on Twitter X for the world. You know, Deneen Borelli?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We're trying to get her on the show, actually.
Well, maybe this will help.
All right.
I thought she looked fantastic. She posed on her back deck in a bikini and said, "Well, welcome to 60.
Yeah.
And I was like, man.
I've known Deneen for years. She's a Project 21 member. I've seen her in D.C. when I go to events and stuff. We've had her on before.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking with Joey just today to get her and her husband on as guests because they do kind of a duo thing on Newsmax.
Okay.
Now.
I was thinking to myself, man,
the email's been sent.
Thinking, man or woman, if we all look as good as Deneen Borelli at 60 or Chris Arps at 58, then we're all doing just fine.
You know what they say, black don't crack. So, I said that. Speaking of black don't crack, Tim, and I want to kind of diverge a little bit away from politics as we start to do it today. A major announcement was made today by the major leagues.
Yes.
They are announced that they are going to add statistics from the Negro leagues to the MLB historical record. So now Josh Gibson, the brother of great Cardinal pitcher Bob Gibson will be the major league single season and career record holding in batting average. He batted .466 in 1943 and .372 for his career. He broke Ty Cobb's .367 mark that had been around since 1928. You didn't know that Josh Gibson was Bob Gibson's brother?
I did not. I did not.
His much, much older brother.
I'm old, but I'm not that old. And I think that's fantastic. And can you imagine, Chris, the statistical heavy weight lifting that went in to going back to the 19-whatevers, maybe the 1800s, and looking for all of those records and newspaper clippings and putting this all together. Amazing.
It's a hard debate because
it is.
Because one, the major leagues, that was the top baseball professional league in the United States. Those were the best players at the time, because of segregation. The African American players had their own league. Those players were exceptional as well. And you just wonder, can you make the comparison between an all-white, all-black league? Would these African-American players play as well in the white league? I guess Jackie Robinson proved that when he came into Major League Baseball in 1947, became Rookie of the Year at 29 or 30 years old. But it's interesting to see that. Can you really compare eras to eras like that, I guess, in so many words? So the white major league players and the African American players, they were exceptional players because once Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, so many other black players came in and they all did very, very well. But just interesting to see, can you make that comparison like that? And wonder also, Tim, what are people going to be thinking? Does this dilute the purity of the game because these players never did directly compete with the players that are in these record books now.
Yeah, it's a great discussion to have amongst friends and at cocktail parties and trivia nights because we often hear that debate right between the eras, you know, with the players of today with their equipment have performed better or worse back then. With the players back then, if they had the same level of equipment and training and the amount of physical knowledge, the health knowledge and the supplements and all that. And so, yeah, when you're combining players, from the black and white leagues, when you're putting that together. So it's a very interesting discussion, and we'll never know the answer, but it's a fascinating thing. I think this is a good thing for baseball. Yeah. It gives us, it widens the breadth and scope of the game.
And it's interesting, too, when you talk about players from different eras, and when you talk about nutrition, strength, and all of that. These players today have all of these regimens and everything where they are in top-notch state and shape, but Bob Gibson completed like 20 full games, completed like 20 games, you know, and these guys weren't, you didn't come out in three or four innings back in the day. You pitched like an entire game. How do those guys do it if their conditioning and training wasn't as good as what we have in modern day baseball? It's very interesting.
It is interesting. And, you know, one of the sports where you see the development of technology most obviously is in the golf world, right? And many wonder, okay, what if Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus had these titanium drivers and these irons that are, you know, forged and all that? Mm-hmm. Would they have been even better than they were? Or were they so good it didn't matter with the equipment? So anyhow, it is a fascinating debate to have. Well, folks, like we said, we're on Trump Trial Watch, and here's the latest. In case you just jumped into the car, there is no verdict in the Trump trial case today. Made everybody kind of pass out there for a second. The jury has gone home. Jury deliberations did begin. They deliberated for close to 4 hours. They have not come to a verdict. I am not, as a former practicing lawyer, as a trial lawyer, as someone who prosecuted cases, I had jury trials on both civil and criminal matters. Anybody who's telling you this means that and this means the other thing is more likely than not wrong or not exactly right. The only thing you can say is, for sure, at least this jury is taking this seriously enough that they didn't go into the jury box or into the jury room, spend about 10 or 15 minutes, maybe eat lunch, and then go, yeah, we all hate Trump, right? All right, Trump man bad. They went back and said guilty. They have not done that.
It's very interesting that you brought up that you cannot always read a jury, because I have a story here in The Bulwark by Mark Caputo. Both sides, people that are anti-Trump and pro-Trump, legal experts are saying that there may be a juror that is on the jury that may side with Trump. And here's what they've saying.
Interesting. Somebody's found something.
Caputo said, this juror appears to nod along in seeming accordance with the defense at times and, quote, lit up when Senator J.D. Vance and some of Trump's other high-profile surrogates showed up at the courthouse.
Aha.
Also, quote, another insider pointed out that the juror could barely suppress a smile when Blanche, that's his attorney, Trump's attorney, appeared to trip up Cohen on the witness stand during a heated exchange. This is from a Democrat. This next quote, it says, it appears the Trump team isn't the only group singling this someone out. Quote, there's one juror that people are worried about, and I share that worry. A Democratic former DOJ official, Harry Littman, tweeted yesterday, can't identify her or him per judge's order, but seems less engaged and slightly irritable. Now, with all of your court experience and reading jurors and everything, and like you said, you can't read what a juror or jury will ever do. What's your initial assessment of what these people are talking about, this particular juror? And I'd be curious to know if he's the attorney.
In a normal case, one of the two, or I heard somebody say there was three attorneys on this jury.
Think.
So whatever the case may be, in a normal case, Chris, you would only need one juror to refuse to come to the same conclusion as the other. So here are the three possible outcomes in a normal trial. People are going, how are there three? Well, let me explain. Let's say you have Everyone, well, actually, there's probably four outcomes. Unanimous, all 12 jurors say the defendant is guilty. Mm-hmm. Okay, you have a unanimous guilty verdict, which is in a normal criminal trial, which this is not. This is anything but a normal criminal trial, and I mean that in a very pejorative negative sense. So all 12 jurors, guilty, and that's mm-hmm. what you normally need. In order to reach guilt, you have to have all 12. Or you have not guilty. And that means the jurors reach a unanimous verdict right. of not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a disagreement for guilt or not guilt, so there's your third and your fourth option. Let's say everybody except one juror is saying guilty. Well, then you have a hung jury.
Yeah.
Because you have 11 saying guilty and one just refusing to budge. If this person holds out until the bitter end, then you'll have a hung jury. Now, what about this case? Well, there's been a bunch of headlines that have said things like, jury begins deliberations in Trump hush money case after corrupt judge, this is from Bongino, mm-hmm. tells them they don't need to be unanimous to convict. Now, you're thinking, wait a minute. I thought that in a criminal trial, you have to be unanimous. The problem with this case is it's so convoluted and complicated. The judge has said you need to be unanimous on certain counts, but when you're trying to figure out if there's a violation of a federal elections issue, here are your three options, and you can choose any one of those. I'm sorry. In a normal criminal case, that would not happen. I think that's another ground for reversible error, but that's kind of where we are.
Mm.
This is a convoluted case with convoluted jury instructions. And I think, Chris, that's reflected by the first 3.5 hours. I think the jury in the first day of deliberations is simply trying to figure out, okay, what did we all hear? Is there any kind of commonality between the 12 of us? Did we all hear the witnesses say the same thing? And then what did we all hear from the jury instructions? Does everybody understand what we're supposed to find or not? And so I think with 34 counts, 6.5 weeks of testimony, they're just trying to figure out who's on first today.
Yeah, and I think Todd Blanche had the quote of the day in his closing argument when he said, you cannot convict Trump, President Trump, of any crime beyond a reasonable doubt on the words of Michael Cohen. And I think that about says it all. Convicted liar, a guy who has said that he is profiting off of Donald Trump's legal woes, a guy who would say absolutely anything and has no integrity, no credibility whatsoever. So hopefully there is that one juror there that the Bulwark has spotted is the person that will dissent and will have a hung jury and have this circus for now over with.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and as soon as the jury's done deliberating, for better or for worse, Trump will be a free man mm-hmm. until November because all the other cases, all the other lawfare is not going to be heard in a court of law. This was the only, after firing everything in the kitchen sink at the wall, the only piece of spaghetti that stuck was this Alvin Bragg case. Mm-hmm. None of the other cases, more likely than not, are going to go to trial. And so the left, by showcasing Donald Trump in one of the worst possible persecutions in New York City, they may have done his campaign actually a favor. If anybody wants to argue this has hurt Trump, then it's only hurt him because he doesn't have a bigger lead in all of the swing states where he currently does lead.
Yeah, exactly.
And they've allowed him, while Joe Biden refuses to go behind a camera and talk to reporters, Donald Trump has basically been campaigning yep. to the nation in New York every day. So we'll see if that affects it. Chris, we're going to break all of that down with our legal eagle, Zach Smith, around 4:25, and we'll have a huge announcement that involves Chris and I and Joey and Zach. Hey. What could that possibly be? Yeah, and exactly. more people. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. You know, Tim, we brought in the show with it being Wednesday, you did, and it Hump Wednesday and everything. And the day after Wednesday is the day before Wednesday is Tuesday. And, you know, there's an election somewhere in America on Tuesday. There were big elections in Texas. The Rhinos survived. Representative Tony Gonzalez, who just a couple of weeks ago was on Meet the Press and on the Sunday shows just dogging out his fellow House colleagues, won in a runoff. He won 50.7% to 49.3%.
Whoa.
Barely survived. President Trump won his district by 17 points. And Dave Phelan, Texas House Speaker, who would have been the first House Speaker to lose a primary in 52 years, edged out his opponent. So the Rhinos survive barely in the great state, my home state, my birth state, Texas, the Lone Star State.
Now, I did also hear a bunch of the House Republicans who were voting against school choice, though, did lose.
Yes.
So the speaker survived by 300 votes. And by the way, folks, representative districts in Texas are huge. They are massive. And so that was a very narrow victory. But some of the other rural Republicans who are not voting for school choice, Greg Abbott was successful in ousting many of them. That's a lesson for everyone here in the show.
Yeah, I knew when they didn't win their runoffs or their early elections, whenever it had in the fall, I knew they probably weren't going to survive runoff.
So interesting results out of Texas. All right, we got Zach Smith coming up at 4:25. Chris at 4:45. We will have Chris's Corner.
Yeah, we're going to talk about 2024 campaign, RFK, what he's up to, and some startling statistics regarding young people and their political activity and their belief in our country. It's startling.
Mm-hmm. At 5:07, Speaker Stump Speech, I've got some key money quotes from legal experts all across the country. I was thinking I would need to have two Speaker Stump Speeches today in case the jury decision did come in. Mm. It has not come in, so I'm going to tell you what some of these legal experts have said. And it makes you wonder, has justice become a joke in the United States of America? That'll be the stump speech. And Missouri State Senator Ben Brown, one of the highlights of the session, Chris, as you know, was Ben Brown's SJR 78 getting across the finish line. That's going to make some proposals to our electoral system. Very important proposals indeed regarding who gets to vote and how. That'll all be at 5:25. When we come back, Legal Eagle Zach Smith on what he thinks about the conclusion of the Trump trial. Does it mean anything that the jury has deliberated for close to 4 hours without a verdict or not? And a big special announcement for all of you all in News Talk STL Nation. Everything and more when Chris and I come back. 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewsTalkSTL.com.
I would say, in listening to the charges from the judges, as you know, very conflicted and corrupt, because of the confliction, very, very corrupt. Mother Teresa could not beat these charges. These charges are rigged. The whole thing is rigged. The whole country's a mess between the borders and fake elections, and you have a trial like this where the judge is so conflicted he can't breathe.
4:26, and welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. You know, Tim, I should have stayed in the studio instead of getting some water. Are we making the announcement? You handed me the sheet, or?
Well, why don't you, you want to bring our guest in, and then you want to ask him what he's doing with us in a few weeks?
we will do that. Thank you for reminding me. Mm. My head was, out in the clouds. Hey, on the line with us is Zach Smith.
It's all perfectly legal. You are out of order. You're out of order. The whole trial is out of order.
Zach Smith, legal fellow with the Heritage Foundation.
You know, I ask you a lot of predictions. Can you predict what the Supreme Court probably will do with this action? And on the line with us is Zach Smith from the Heritage Foundation. Zach, I'm so ready to just question you about Donald Trump, the Supreme Court, that I almost forgot about the big announcement that I guess we're going to do right now. You will be in town with us on June 25th, along with Joel Griffith. We will be having an event calling Saving America 2024, the Economy and the Courts. It will be June 25th at the St. Charles Funny Bone at the streets of St. Charles. Can't wait to see you again, my friend. And tell us just how excited are you, Zach?
Well, I'm very excited. It's always good to see you guys in person. Good to get to St. Louis to talk about all of the things we can do to save our country. So I appreciate the opportunity to come out, and I'm looking forward to the visit on June 25th.
Yeah, Zach, we're really excited about this. Folks, you can go to newstalkstl.com. I'm sure that Katie is throwing up all the details right now as we speak. We want everybody to come. It is a free event, but it's ticketed. We need to know how many folks we're going to have in how many seats. So we would love everybody to go to newstalkstl.com, sign up for those tickets, and join us. And Zach, your colleague, Joel Griffith, I know Joel. He's a great guy, isn't he? He knows everything you know about crime and punishment and law and order. Joel's got that covered likewise on the economy side of the scale, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Tim. I'm happy to be the riffraff to Joel's color commentary, but it'll be a great event. I know we're both very much looking forward to it and looking forward to continuing our great discussion in person that we get to have every week here on the radio.
Can't wait to have that, Zach. All right, Zach, we are on... Yes. Jury watch. We're watching to see if there will be a verdict today in the Trump trial. The one thing that I've been waiting to ask you about, and there has been some debate about this since the trial ended, is that there are questions about the judge's instructions to the jury. I'm hearing that the prosecution wants a more open-ended instruction under which Donald Trump could be convicted for a variety of different reasons. Of course, the defense wants otherwise. Explain to us what's going on here, Zach.
Well, Chris, as usual, I will put in a shameless plug. You knew right where I was going. I have a piece coming out on the Daily Signal later this evening. It should go out in an early blast either this evening or early tomorrow morning, explaining the charge in this case and how it could impact Donald Trump's chances of either getting acquitted or convicted or ending up in a hung jury where essentially the jurors can't reach a verdict. That's what a hung jury is. Now, in terms of the specific charge, what is odd about this charge and what a lot of folks have been commenting on is the fact that the judge instructed the jury that the prosecutors don't have to prove what the underlying crime is. They don't have to prove that Donald Trump ever committed it. And importantly, they don't have to all agree on what the underlying crime that Donald Trump was supposedly trying to cover up, what that is. And the reason this is important is because you may remember Alvin Bragg charged Donald Trump with 34 counts of essentially misdemeanor bookkeeping charges. The only way he can elevate those misdemeanor bookkeeping charges into felony offenses is if he can prove that Donald Trump falsified those bookkeeping records in order to cover up another crime, essentially. Now, what that other crime is, that's been a source of a lot of debate throughout the course of the trial. It looks like there are three different variations that Alvin's Bragg team have settled on. One is a federal campaign finance violation, potentially. One is the falsification of some other bank and tax records, and then some tax offenses under New York state law is the third one. But what the judge said, essentially, is that all the jurors don't have to agree. So long as they agree that Donald Trump falsified the records with the intent to cover up another crime, they don't all have to agree on what that other crime could be. And that's the very odd situation for a criminal defendant.
Yeah, Zach, odd to say the least. So, Zach, you know, I have not actively practiced in nearly a decade, but I have kept up my law licenses. I do my continuing legal education. I speak about the law every single week with you and from time to time other legal experts. I read a lot of opinions. And so I feel like I'm not as rusty as I otherwise could be. But, Zach, I was a prosecutor. I did do jury trials. I had to prepare jury instructions. And, Zach, this is where I lose my understanding of what this case is about. Everything you just said, I've heard that from other legal experts like you on the big cable news networks, on the internets. I've been reading the same thing over and over, and I'm thinking, how can that be true? How can that be so? How is that possible? Zach, is this yet another example in this case of the creation of what we would call reversible error? I mean, how can you convict someone in a criminal court of law in the United States of America where all the elements are not proven beyond a reasonable doubt, where you can pick and choose multiple choice fashion what crime or maybe an unknown crime that the defendant may have created? Zach, that sounds like a kangaroo court, not a court in the United States of America. But tell me where am I on all this?
No. Look, Tim, if Donald Trump is convicted, you're absolutely right. This is going to be front and center in any appeal that Donald Trump raises into the higher New York courts when he asked them to review this case if he is convicted. You know, what's interesting is I've seen some on the left say that there is some precedent in New York law for this type of charge. If that's the case, that's an entirely different and equally as problematic a situation to confront. But even those on the left who say this may arguably be a permissible way to charge the jury, a way to instruct the jury what the law is, as a matter of prudence, they said they doubted the judge would do that. And guess what? The judge didn't. Mm. And so I think it just is the continuation of another iteration, a long line of decisions that this judge in this case has made that certainly have not gone in Donald Trump's favor. I mean, don't forget as well, he also excluded Brad Smith, a former federal election commissioner, from testifying about many topics that he wanted to testify about, essentially saying that one of these predicate offenses that's an issue here, the federal campaign finance violation, Brad Smith was essentially going to say that what Donald Trump did wouldn't qualify as a federal campaign finance offense. And yet that information didn't come into the jury. And so unfortunately, I think what you have right now, the jurors are out, they have the evidence, they've come back a couple times, asked for certain portions of the transcript to be read back to them. You saw Alvin Bragg and his team essentially trying to overwhelm the jurors. Say, there's so much here. There's so much information. Surely there has to be, you know, some type of crime that was committed in this case. All we can do is hope that the jurors see through that, and that at least one of them will stand up and say, no, there is no crime that's been committed here.
Speaking with Zach Smith, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast. Zach will also be in town June 25th at our Saving America 2024 event, The Economy and the Courts, out at the St. Charles Funny Bone. Get your tickets today. They will go quickly. Zach, I want to ask you about another court case of Donald Trump, the Mar-a-Lago documents case. Yesterday, Judge Cannon, she slapped down Special Prosecutor Smith's gag order request. I want to get your thoughts on that. And also, there was a New York Times article that did an expose of Judge Cannon. The title of the story is Emerging Portrait of Judge in Trump Documents Case, Prepared, Prickly, and Slow. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I can tell it's a flattering piece, as we could all expect from the New York Times, of Judge Cannon. You know, should we all have such nice things said about us? But look, you know, it's not particularly surprising. The portrayal in the mainstream media has been that Judge Cannon is somehow tilting the wheels of justice in favor of Donald Trump and his legal team. I don't think that's true. In fact, I think just the opposite. She is holding the special counsel's office to the same rules and procedures that others would have to be held to as well. Obviously, we've seen Jack Smith trying to expedite these cases, trying to get them to trial before the upcoming election in November. I don't think that's a realistic possibility anymore. But, you know, Donald Trump is subject to a gag order in the New York case right now. And as we talked about before, that raises very grave, very serious First Amendment concerns whenever anyone is under a gag order saying they can't comment or say certain things. But it's even more problematic when the person subject to the gag order is one of the leading candidates to be president of the United States, while at the same time, the mainstream media, even some of the other witnesses, are commenting on Donald Trump, trashing him in the media, commenting on the salacious allegations that are being made at trial. And yet Donald Trump is not able to respond. And so I think Judge Cannon rightly is very skeptical of these gag order requests. And unfortunately, though, what the special counsel's office did in making that request certainly seems more like a political than a legal play. Mm.
Zach Smith, our guest from the Heritage Foundation, as he is every Wednesday afternoon around this time. And he's coming to St. Louis on Tuesday, June 25th. I just checked out our website. Yep, everything's up and ready to roll. You can jump on newstalkstl.com, click on the Saving America 2024 banner, which is at the top of the page, and then click on the link and get tickets. We'd love to have you. Limited space at this Funny Bone Theater, but it's a beautiful little, it's a beautiful theater, and I know it holds several hundred, I believe, and so we'd love to have you there joining us. Zach, first it was Clarence Thomas, now it's Samuel Alito. Man, if you don't toe the party line in Washington, D.C., they quickly want to take you out and whip you in the public square, and that's what they're doing, you know, rhetorically to Samuel Alito now. Zach, I love your Twitter page at TZ Smith on Twitter, you have reposted a Heritage Foundation tweet which relates to this alleged controversy. The appeal to heaven meme, which is a large evergreen tree, and it says an appeal to heaven. Zach, what is this latest controversy about? Why is the left lighting their hair on fire about Flaggate and Samuel Alito?
Well, it stems, Justice Alito, his wife in particular, had the audacity to fly in his yard and appeal to heaven flag. Now, for your listeners that aren't familiar with it, the mainstream media is painting this flag as some sort of symbol of right-wing radicalism, saying it's a sign that insurrectionists use to communicate with each other to show their support for radical right-wing causes. Well, that radical right-wing rabble-rouser, George Washington, who commissioned this flag during the American Revolution, might be surprised to hear some of the connotations that are currently being associated with it. But look, I think it's important to put this in context as well. This is nothing more than an attempt to bully Justice Alito into recusing himself from some of the highest profile cases this term, some involving the January 6th defendants, some involving Donald Trump and his immunity claims as well. But Justice Alito, to his credit, he's not backing down. In fact, he issued a letter responding to some of the calls of Sheldon Whitehouse and others, saying that, look, he's not backing down. He did nothing inappropriate, and that the judicial canons of ethics do not require him to recuse him. So I say good on Justice Alito and shame on those who are attempting to smear him based on just untrue statements and half-truths that are being reported in the mainstream media.
Zach, an appeals court panel that included two Trump appointees ruled there in D.C. that an inherently unfair trial venue jury pool for January 6th defendants, it is not inherently unfair for January 6th defendants because the city's residents are mostly liberal. We all know that it's very liberal, of a very blue city. Has there ever been an instance of a trial being moved, a political trial being moved because the people there were too much of the opposite political persuasion of the defendant? And was this a ruling that was inevitable?
Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't seen this particular ruling yet, Chris. But look, there are instances if a judge believes that a defendant cannot receive a fair trial, that trial can be moved to a different venue. And you've seen this, particularly with certain high-profile defendants or high-profile crimes or salacious crimes often that have been committed. So a juror, a criminal defendant can have his or her trial take place in front of a different panel of jurors, a different veneer of jurors, than ordinarily would be the case if that defendant cannot get a fair trial where the crime took place or where the trial is taking place. And so that type of request is not unheard of. Certainly, I understand the impetus to move the trials out of Washington, D.C. or other locales because of potentially unfavorable jury pulls there. But I have to take a closer look at that decision and see what exactly the rationale of the appeals court is in making that decision.
Maybe you'll talk about it on a SCOTUS 101 podcast this Friday.
Maybe, although you'll be happy to hear, Chris, we're back with a new episode this week. We have a lot to cover with all of the decisions the Supreme Court is handing down. And we are at the beginning of June. That's when the court gets to its busiest time of year, handing out some of its biggest decisions from the term.
Yes. Life is good, Tim.
Yeah, Zach, I wanted to ask you about that. You segued exactly where I was going to go next here. Zach, we've in all the melee of the Trump lawfare and specifically the New York City case, which we've been also focused on, the month of May has nearly passed us by. June begins this weekend. Zach, has the Supreme Court handed anything down, or will the hand down start next week, and maybe remind our audience of maybe some of the top cases that you're waiting to see decisions on?
The court has started handing down some decisions already, none particularly high profile. There was a disappointing decision where the court upheld the constitutionality of the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, said it was constitutional. Mm-hmm. Its funding mechanism didn't violate the Constitution.
And Clarence Thomas wrote that. Remember, we talked, that was crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and what's actually interesting, Chris, is Justice Samuel Alito and Neil Gorsuch dissented from that decision, saying that Clarence Thomas and the Chief Justice and the other conservatives got it wrong. And so I think it pushes back against the liberal narrative that all of the conservatives on the court are somehow results-oriented, mm-hmm. or all think it's a monolithic bloc, because the fact is, if you look at the votes, they don't. They often vote differently, even in very important cases. But we also have a couple of big cases coming up that'll deal with the power of the administrative state. We have a couple of very big First Amendment cases coming up that deal with the power of the government, the state and federal governments, vis-a-vis tech companies. And so there'll be a lot to talk about as we head to the end of the term.
That is Zach Smith, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast. And we will see Zach next month and the Saving America 2024, the economy and the courts. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. Always love your legal expertise and talking with you, my friend.
Always great to be on. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys on June 25th.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Zach Smith. He said we met him one time. He came into the studio downtown. He was in, was he speaking at SLU, I think?
He was speaking at SLU, and I just ran into him at an election integrity event in his home state of Florida. And folks, our listeners, come out and see Zach. He is really entertaining. Mm. He's very funny. He's got a good sense of humor. And Joel Griffith is hilarious as well. And these guys are brilliant. Like, Chris, we have an we have a legal encyclopedia in front of us every Wednesday afternoon. Mm-hmm. Joel is the same way with the economy, taxation. He makes a lot of very complicated concepts very understandable. And Joel's going to really be able to break down for you all the damage that the Biden administration has done over the last 3 years.
And I'm telling you, you want to get your tickets early. We've had a couple of these events, and they have been sold out. The place has been packed. Go to our website. You can see the pictures. Everyone loves these events. We love seeing you all. And so put on your calendar June 25th, the St. Charles Funny Bone, Joel Griffith, Zach Smith, News Talk STL 101.94, Saving America 2024. Up next, 4:47, we will talk about Robert F. Kennedy and Rand Paul. They apparently have a bromance going on. Hmm. And we'll also talk about the young kids, how they feel about their country and their future. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Joey, just wondering, do you think people with food derangement syndrome know they have it?
You're an idiot.
And second question, did you steal Trump's haircut? Did he steal yours? Cultural appropriation haircut right there. She didn't like that too much. Joey Reid, everybody. Trump derangement syndrome. Full swing.
4:50 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. And that is one person there that is misnamed, because she doesn't seem to have much joy in her life when you watch her show. Sometimes mm-hmm. when I get home, Tim, and I'll turn it on MSNBC to watch it. Yes, I do watch MSNBC because I like doing show prep, and I like hearing what the other side says. And Becky will be off in another room or with it on, and she's just like, no, I cannot listen to that woman. You got to turn it down or go to another room or something. So, yeah, she is, she's a troll. She's just not a happy person. And
why is she so angry?
I don't know. She is an angry person, period. And she has so much to be thankful for in her life. I mean, her family are immigrants from Haiti. She went to an Ivy League college. She is on national TV. She is respected as a progressive political analyst. And she hates America. She hates her country. She hates everybody. Mm-hmm. So it is very, very perplexing. Joey, Chris's Corner today, we're going to talk about the romance between Rand Paul and RFK and the young people. What's wrong with them?
Chris.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
Apparently, Tim Rand Paul, Robert F. Jr., Kennedy Jr., has drawn up something of a quote-unquote bromance. Kennedy has had several closed-door meetings in Senator Paul's Senate office, and RFK is being advised by Senator Paul's chief strategist and former chief of staff, Doug Stafford. Washington Beacon is reporting that. Also, RFK has a shot to make this June's presidential debate on the 27th.
Oh, wow.
Kennedy would be the first independent presidential candidate to make the debate stage in 32 years. I remember the other one. It was Ross Perot back there in the 1992 campaign. Kennedy appears to have met the polling requirements in three polls. He has until June 20th to qualify in a fourth. Five states, 35 electoral votes, confirmed to ABC News that Kennedy has qualified for the ballot. Delaware, Hawaii, Michigan, Oklahoma, and Utah. Also, the Kennedy campaign says it has 201 eligible electoral votes. It claims it has submitted signatures for ballot access in seven states, which has 139 votes, with enough signatures for eight others. So here's a very interesting, we've talked about how Donald Trump is leading in all of the swing state polls, all seven of them. But it's, well, when you look at those polls, Republicans are frequently trailing the Democrats in the bound down ballot races in those races, which is very interesting. I have not, there's one popular explanation is Biden is being singled out for blame on inflation, and voters seem less likely to associate that with Congress. That could be an answer. Who knows? You know, I was watching the Meet the Press Sunday shows, especially Meet the Press. They're starting to scare the voter thing again. Meet the Press had four Secretary of States from swing states on talking about will the elections be secure. Of course, Brad Raffenberger got the question that all Republican politicians get. Will you believe that the election is fair? Will you certify all of that nonsense? You know, there was a poll that was done. I can't see who this is, but it was the share of swing state voters who say they do not trust the 2024 election. Mm-hmm. Independents, 55%. Republicans, 48%. Democrats, 47%. Roughly equal shares of Republicans, Democrats, and Independents believe violence could plague the 2024 election, according to a Bloomberg Morning Consult poll out today. And as I said on Meet the Press, it was absolutely sickening how she was trying to drum up how Republicans, Trump supporters, MAGA supporters, they are the ones that you have to worry about when it comes to these elections, and that the elections were fair and consistent, which they weren't. And I give Brad Raffensperger a lot of respect and a lot of kudos for pushing back on the narrative that she was trying to foster. The Democrats know that they were expecting this lawfare to help mm-hmm. take Donald Trump mm-hmm. in the 2024 election. They know that's going by the wayside. They're pinning their hopes on this trial, but it's absolutely a nothing burger. Now they're going to have to win the election fair and square, air quotes, in the air, or are they going to decide they're going to have to steal it once again? I'm glad that Republicans, Tim and I, are involved in election integrity organizations that are keeping a vigil and a tight eye on our elections this year. And any funny business that is going on will not, you know, result in a repeat of 2020. And that is Chris's Corner.
I saw the second half of that Meet the Press episode this past Sunday. I was literally yelling at the television every time Kristen Welker said, "Thank you for joining us for a very special Memorial Day edition of America's Institutions Under Attack." I said, "You're the ones attacking them. Chris, they're the ones that are attacking America's institutions." But it's all this saving democracy stuff when they're the ones who are jailing people, literally, who are speaking up and saying their own mind, pushing back against the COVID tyranny, standing up for pro-life measures, going before school boards. Yeah. The left is the one attacking Americans.
And these are the people that are talking about eliminating the filibuster. These are the people who want to pack the Supreme Court. And these are people that want to make D.C. state in Puerto Rico so they can gain four more senators. But they're all about democracy over there on the left. I tell you.
It was such a ridiculous. I had the same thoughts you did. I was wondering. I was like, I wonder if Chris is watching this.
I'm either watching it or I'm either listening to it on the podcast. And I actually like doing listening on the podcast. Helps me focus a little more on it. Mm-hmm. 507, Speaker Stump Speech.
Yes, I have. So you don't have to take my word or Zach Smith's word for it. I've got a whole listing of legal experts who have commented at the end of the Trump trial as the jury's deliberating, and I want you to hear from them as to the joke that they think that it is.
And at 524, we'll speak with Ben Brown, state senator from Missouri's 26th district. We'll talk about SJR 78, which modifies provisions relating to elections, citizen-only voting, which is close to my heart, and ranked choice voting, which is not. You are listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.